You're listening to the UFO Radio Network, and this is the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show with your host, Andrew Carrington Hitchcock.
Hello, everybody. And the show I'm going to do today is a show I've wanted to do for a very long time. Now, when I was the co-host of Bloodlines with Pastor Eli James, Michael Collins Piper passed one week. And when Pastor Eli phoned me, you know, 10 minutes before the show, what have you, you know, what are we doing the show on today? I said, well, how about Michael Collins Piper? And he says, well, what about him? And he hadn't heard that he had passed. So we did a tribute show to him then, but it was rather hastily put together. Pastor Eli had actually met him at a book signing. He went specially to get a Final Judgment signed by Mike. But the lady I have with me today, who's also a good friend, was one of Michael's best friends. And I'm going to play you an audio clip as well, which will show in what high regard Mike held my guest today, which is the wonderful Deanna Spingola. So I'm going to bring her up right now. Deanna, are you with me?
Yes, thank you.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. And folks, what I'm going to do first is I've got a 59-second clip that I'm going to play because I never spoke to Mike. I corresponded with him, I think, once. I think I sent him an email and he emailed me back. I heard, you know, I listened to the Tex Mars show a lot back then when he was on the show. And this is what he said in a, let me see, it's October the 24th, 2009. So have a listen to this.
Tex, you mentioned to me before we came on the program, you wanted to ask me about the origins of my book. Mm. That's a very interesting question, a key question, a pointed question. Now, as you pointed out, there's been a lot written about the Rothschilds over the years. Now, as far as I'm concerned, there are two key books about the Rothschilds that if anybody wants the story about the Rothschilds, they've got the story right there. Number one of those books was written by the late Arnold Leese. He wrote a book back in the 1930s, a very small book entitled Gentile Folly, The Rothschilds. Hmm. But a more recent date, the far more important book on the topic, is a book that you published, Synagogue of Satan by Andrew Carrington Hitchcock.
Oh, yes.
And for anyone who wants to know the history of the Rothschild family, it's right there in that book. Now,
there you go, and it's a great sadness to me that I was never able to send Mike the post that I did, where I actually managed to get into Arnold Leese's house. For those of you who have his books, where it says White House, Pewley Hill, Guildford, in the introduction, where he writes a little note and then he puts his address at the bottom. I went up there and, you know, I took a copy of Gentile Folly with me, actually. And a lady came to the window, you know, and I went there with my girlfriend, unannounced. Probably thought we were Jehovah's Witnesses or something. And I just put the book up and she saw it. She said, I'm coming round, and then invited me in. So I was actually able to sit where he wrote that work. Now, Deanna, just give us your memories of Mike, and then we can play your clip. I mean, when did your friendship start? And, you know, I know that you were very good friends.
Well, I started writing on the internet in about 2005, and I started listening to Mike's program, and I would call in to his program, and then I wrote my trilogy, and he really appreciated the trilogy. We just hit it off. Maybe it was like the brother that I did not have. I mean, I have two brothers, but my older brother was just, we didn't get along at all. And Mike was just our spirits just connected. We just thought a lot alike. I appreciated his scholarship, and he had a very, very quick mind. He was a wonderful researcher. He never speculated. He researched. And he was a great reader. He had a huge collection. We both had cats, and he used to call my cats his cat's cousins. He told me that his cat was named Donald, and he used to refer to Donald on his program as the Hound of the Baskervilles. And he wasn't a hound at all. He was just this big cat. He was overweight, but oh, Mike just loved that cat. And when Mike was in the hospital, he worried about his cat more than he worried about himself. And his neighbor always took care of Donald. But Mike used to kid and say, yeah, Donald has cousins in the Chicago area. And because I would send him pictures of my cats. And we were just very close. And he was... Sometimes he used profanity, and in his emails. If he sent out a group email, for instance, to five people, myself included, if he used profanity, he would always email me and say, "Excuse my language." He was thoughtful. He was honest, totally honest about everything. And he was just a really good friend.
Absolutely.
And I miss him.
Thank you, Deanna. And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to play what Mike had to say about Deanna. Now, Deanna, do you have a rough idea of when this little piece came out? What sort of year that Mike said this about your show?
It must have been 2012. Okay. I started in radio in 2010. I was on the RBN network, the same one that Mike was on. And so it had to have been probably 2012 or thereabouts. I do have a lot of Mike's work and thoughts. I have a regular MCP file, and I have all of his emails, which actually amount to, well, almost 500 pages of back and forth emails. And it was probably 2012. My first book came out in 2010, so it would have been, I don't have a date on it.
Yes, that's fine. We've got just a rough window. I just thought, you know, the listeners may be interested. But what's most important is the content. So I'm going to mute us both, Deanna, and I'm just going to play this clip, folks. It's about 6 minutes. Here we go.
But I think the absolutely all-around best broadcaster on RBN, and as far as I'm concerned, in the entire truth movement. I haven't heard them all, folks, of course. But I have a good handle of what's going on out there. Hear bits and pieces. By far, the absolutely best broadcaster all around is Deanna Spingola. Our own Deanna Spingola right here at RBN. She covers so many issues and covers them all well. She has a good handle. I noticed this. I found this out a long, long time ago when Deanna would call into this program, talking a few years ago now. And from looking at her website and reading what she's written and certainly her two books, the Ruling Elite series, Deanna has a very good handle on what's happening in our world today and what's happened throughout history. And it's an honor for me to be on the same network as this great lady. She, today I happen to be listening to her interview with, Friedrich Berg, Fritz Berg, as he's known. He is the sponsor of the excellent website, NaziGassings.com. And, you know, as I say, Deanna's broadcasts are so comprehensive in that they cover the gamut of the issues, and she does not steer away from anything, even controversial things such as, quote-unquote, the Holocaust. let me say it again. I didn't say the, I didn't use that phrase, the Holocaust, with the appropriate reverence. The Holocaust. You know who was responsible for that? Hitler and the Nazis! No, Deanna doesn't steer away from anything. She lays out the facts. And I know that Deanna suffers that same thing that I and so many others suffer from, and that is getting kicked around for just daring to speak the truth. But you know, Deanna crosses the line into that area of the Holocaust and actually dares to tell people that Hitler and the Nazis, what does that sound like? Hitler and the Nazis, that they weren't really what we've been told they were. And you know, I'll tell you, I'm going to be honest about this. I'll tell you what particularly, why I find Deanna's broadcast particularly important, folks. Now, this may upset some of the men in our audience because they'll say I'm favoring women and women have no place in the public arena. And believe me, I have a couple friends who feel that way, folks. So I'm not overstating this. I'm talking about some very good friends of mine. They really don't think women should be in politics. But I'll tell you what, I think the reason why Deanna's broadcasts are so important and why you should try to give them as widespread circulation as possible by alerting people to them through emails and letters and cards, it's because Deanna is a woman. For the last 50, 60 years, I'm just going to use the movement in general. Just use that terminology. The movement has always been, and not surprisingly so, dominated by male voices. And consequently, most people who have heard what the movement has to say have heard it from men. Here, however, for the first time, and this is not a slight to some of the other great lady broadcasters out there, like Carolyn Yeager, who did at one point broadcast in this network. Carolyn's focus is not as broad-ranging as Deanna's, but Carolyn does a great job herself. But here with Deanna, we have a soft-spoken, ladylike, articulate, friendly, well-read, intelligent. I mean, you know, the superlatives can go on and on. Okay, yeah, okay, you get the picture. We have this woman who is bringing out this solid message on her own and through her wise selection of a variety of guests covering a wide variety of issues, including those ones that a lot of people don't like to talk about. And I find it personally refreshing. It gives me hope. It gives me hope, ladies and gentlemen. Because we are, in an odd way, finding, well, don't mean to imply that Deanna's odd, but I mean, here's a lady out here talking about these things and making sense. And it's a credit to John Stadtmiller and Republic Broadcasting that Deanna has been on this network, and I trust will be for as long as she chooses to be. And it is a good way to help spread the word, not only about these important issues, but about RBN. And I think that's important, ladies and gentlemen, because, and now I'm going to veer off a little bit here into another area that I guarantee you is going to upset some people. But I have to do this because it's one of the reasons why I find Deanna's programming so valuable. There's a very big difference between what you get from Deanna Spingola and, let's be honest about it, Alex Jones.
There certainly is a very big difference. One is telling truth and one isn't. Deanna, I mean, that was strong praise indeed. Just to let the listeners know, I'm sorry that the audio came through quite low there. I didn't want to turn it up too much in case it distorted. Of course, these clips were recorded several years ago when we didn't have the technology that we have now, so they were recorded at lower bit rates, and the actual file sizes are very, very small, which affects that. But Deanna, before we carry on with Mike. I mean, what he just said about your show was fantastic, and of course your show still goes out to this day. Could you please give the audience details of when and where they can listen to your show?
excuse me. I broadcast on Saturday from 3 to 6 p.m. Central Time, and that is at republicbroadcasting.net, and people can listen live, or they can look at the archives at RBN, and certainly we have archives also at Spingola Speaks, which is spingolaspeaks.net.
Yes, you have a great archivist there that's been with you for many years. Well, actually just started putting your programs up there, built the site themselves. It's not a site that you actually maintain, is it? It's actually one of your supporters that's been putting these up for years.
Yes, and I'm just really blessed to have people that that do this. And as you say, he's been doing this for a long time, and I just love him. He's just a remarkable person, and a good friend.
Thanks.
So, and yes, it is, it's a blessing to have people like that in your life.
I agree. And, now folks, some shows that I do, give you an example, the show I do with Michael Walsh every Wednesday. You know, he does all the work essentially because, we go through his articles from the previous week off the Ethnic European. But there are other shows that I do that take a lot of preparation, and this is one of them. So I hope I don't fluff anything today, because what I did for today's show, as I said, it's called The Final Words of Michael Collins Piper. Now, in May 2015, Mike released a series of shows that he was recording live. They were going up on the internet, and he wasn't very well. He was ill, and it was at the end of that month that he passed away. And he said a number of controversial things, and what I was hoping to do today was to actually cut out the various clips and play them through the show. But when I tried to use my software to do this, I couldn't get it to work. Then I tried to use something else and I couldn't get that to work, and I thought, you know what, this is probably because Mike doesn't want this broadcast. And so what I did instead was I made notes on the various things he said, and as Deanna knew him so well, I wanted this show to basically give a little bit more information about Mike, and also to go through some of the issues that he raised in these final broadcasts and see, you know, how accurate he was as to what had happened to him, or how some of it might have been, he may have been motivated to say it, not saying that it didn't happen, but when you're in, he actually said, and I'm going to read the quotes, that he was in terrible pain and he was hoping God would take him. Literally, I'll be reading those out later. And so when someone's in that frame of mind, I think that that's why he probably doesn't regard those final shows as his best work, because he wasn't in the best of health. And if you're not in the best of health, it's going to affect the way that you do a show. Now, Deanna, I'm gonna, we ran through these before the show, and I think it's probably better if we go through by subject rather than by, you know, keep going back to the same people. Now, for example, in the first show, Mike revealed that he's moved to Idaho. People who listened to Mike for years know how much he loved Washington, D.C. He loved being in the city. But he moved to Idaho, of all places, and he said, to get away from Willis and Elizabeth Carto, who he said are bad people, unlike most of those at the American Free Press. He also made a claim in that show that Willis Carto was funded by an executive of Goldman Sachs named George F. Baker III, now deceased, who died in an airplane crash. On the May the 7th, 2015 show, he said that American Free Press is down to 10,000 subscribers from 60,000 subscribers, and it is not going to be around much longer. Well, of course, it is still around, and it seems to be, certainly the shows I did for them seem to be quite popular. On the May 10th, 2015 show, he claimed that Willis Carto and his wife had run away with $1 million after the demise of Liberty Lobby, and whilst Mike knew about this, he didn't worry, as he thought they would put it back into the American Free Press, but instead they started cutting the salaries of American Free Press employees. And at the end of that show, he actually said, "Send me an email and I will send you an in-depth report on the bizarre corrupt behaviour," and these are his words here, folks, "of Elizabeth Carter." Then on the, let me see, I want to get anything else that he said about people at AFP. It's all, most of it's pretty much directed at Willis Carter and Elizabeth Carter. May 20th show, how he found out a long time ago that Willis Carter was a piece of garbage, but he couldn't say so as he was on his payroll. And that's pretty much it. So can you talk us through, Deanna, your understanding of Mike's departure from the American Free Press, because he was obviously most upset about it.
Well, absolutely. He had spent 38 years of his life working for them, and I think probably the majority of the books that they sold were by him. They were very popular, very well researched, and he kept things going. Now, of course, they had other authors. They carried other authors' books, including mine. But when it really came down to it, and they did cut his salary in an attempt to get rid of him, they took the keys away from him to the office. And this, after all of these years of dedication to them, and I do have that report that he wrote, and anyway, they cut his salary, and then right towards the end, there was a contributor to the American Free Press that said that he would no longer make these huge contributions if they kept Mike on. And so, because they were more concerned about the contributions from this gentleman or this individual, then they would get rid of him. And the thing that the crux of it was that this individual that was making these big contributions believed that Sandy Hook was a hoax. And Mike absolutely refused to go down that road. He said this could be legal jeopardy for American Free Press. They could be open to lawsuits if they go down this road of speculation, because he knew that it happened. And Mike was a researcher. He didn't speculate. But this individual said, you either get rid of Mike Piper or there's going to be no more money. Now, the Cardos did love their money, as Mike indicated. And so Mike was out. And the big reason is because he would not cave and he would not lie about something that he knew had happened. And he felt that American Free Press was really, they would not be legitimate if they went down that road of producing fake news. And Mike never did that. Whatever Mike wrote was well researched. He discredited a lot of hoaxes, and he was a researcher. He was a reader. He would never produce garbage. He never produced garbage. What he wrote was well resourced, cited, wonderful books, and it's kind of amazing that American Free Press is still selling those books. And I'm wondering, how are they doing that? I don't know. But he was a legitimate researcher, and he was not gonna give up his good name, and he certainly wasn't going to produce something that they wanted him to do. So they just got rid of him after he'd given all of these years. It was a crime.
It was his own
crime,
job.
Especially when he was sick. And I think probably a lot of his illness was he was diabetic, which can lead to various other things. He had neuropathy. He was in incredible pain. But he would still go to work. He would still do his job despite the pain that he was in. And when he got out of the hospital, he was so devoted that he was in the office as quickly as he possibly could be there. He was an amazing person. Absolutely an amazing person. And they really did a number on him. And just, he was in emotional pain too because of what they did. Even though he knew, he questioned, he knew about the Cardos, love of money and them taking the $1 million out. And he knew that Willis wasn't what Willis pretended to be. He still trusted him. Because for Mike, it was all about the truth. And that's what he always did. It was always about the truth.
Thank you, Deanna. And of course, this, you said 38 years, you know, started off with the spotlight and then that closed and then AFP got opened and, you know, at the same time you had the IHR going alongside and then that went somewhere else and then the Barnes Review and then you've got the Liberty Lobby as well. But I believe that he went straight into there from college. He never actually worked for anyone else, did he?
No, he never did. Never did.
So basically, you know, this also, folks, I mean, how would you feel? You've given 38 years of your life to one employer. I will say that, as I said, you know, you give that amount of time and you're going to feel extremely bitter if it comes to an acrimonious end. And did he tell you, did he actually explain, because it seemed quite strange for a guy that loved Washington DC so much to spend his last months in Idaho. Did he tell you his reasoning behind that?
Well, he couldn't get a disability right away. He was just, and he certainly didn't get severance pay or anything. They just cut him off, totally. Cut him off. And he didn't have that many options. And so he took the only options that were available to him. And he was not close to his family. He had a brother, and he took the option that was available. And I think that he knew that his days were numbered, and so he packed up all of his books. And he had an amazing collection. He'd been collecting since he was a child. He was a reader. He was a researcher from the time that he could read. He was just an amazing person. He loved books. And they were stacked high. He just had a lot of books. And so he started packing up his life in a bunch of cardboard boxes. And went to Idaho. It was he was met in the middle of the country by the person that he went to live with or to live in the cabin that they had, the extra cabin, the guest cabin. And so I imagine the trip itself, well, it was very difficult. And of course, Donald went, but he said goodbye to his neighbors. He said goodbye to everything that he had grown to love. And I guess when you say goodbye to your employment, then everything else that his life was his work. That was his life. He had devoted his life to the truth and to writing, And when that went, then you can feel pretty demoralized and certainly bitter. Of course he was bitter. He'd given his all, more than his all. He'd given his heart to what he was doing. And ultimately, it killed him.
Yes, and thank you for going through that for us, Deanna. I know it's very difficult, as you were very close. I'm going to run through now with... we focused on the illness side, so I'm going to go through some of the shows again with what he said, and he made some... I mean, as I say, these were over nine hours worth of shows, folks, that I went through, all the May shows, and let's see what he said. May the 20th, I've got. He said, how my career as a writer is basically over and I have this god-awful opportunity to say whatever I would like about basically anybody. How I would prefer to be in prison, as at least then I would be looked after medically. Later in that show, he said, my life is coming to an end, thank God, as I don't want to spend the rest of my life in pain, as I'm in terrible pain now. I see a show before that, May 16th, sorry, I missed that, folks. He said how his government will not help him with his health problems, as Deanna said, despite him paying thousands of dollars in taxes over the years, yet they continue to send billions of dollars a year to Israel. On the May the 23rd, 2015 show, he said, hopefully I'm not going to be around much longer. I don't relish the thought of being in pain and unable to walk, and it would be a blessing for me for God to cause my heart to stop. So that is how awful he was feeling, and it was only about a week later that's the window of time that we believe where he passed. So Deanna, with regard to the illness, I mean, we're in May now. Do you know, You've known him now for several years. When was it? Do you remember around the year that he started becoming ill and what this was called? You mentioned he had to go into hospital, the sort of things he had to have done.
Right. He was scheduled to have a program, and he actually was a debate on Sandy Hook, and he had to cancel the program because he had such pain in his legs. And he wasn't able to sleep, so he sent the host of the program an email and stated that he just couldn't do it, that he would have to postpone it. And that day, he had to go by ambulance to the hospital. He thought that maybe he had a clot in his leg or something, a blood clot, but it was, he had actually suffered a heart attack. He had had a heart attack before he ever knew he had a heart attack. He'd had pain in his chest, and his heart at that point was only working at about 50%. His neuropathy from the diabetes was excruciating, and he literally could not walk without a cane, and it was painful at that. He just was in incredible pain. And Mike wasn't a complainer. He was not a complainer. Somebody that has suffered a heart attack, he probably just thought, oh, I've got a little indigestion, and he kept working, kept writing, kept giving. He didn't pay attention to it because he was intent on other things. And, by the time that he did get to the hospital, they did have to do heart surgery, and, Once you have congestive heart failure and you're diabetic, those are terminal kinds of situations.
Yes. And I mean, I also want to, you see, I've noted down the controversial elements, folks, and I don't want to sort of, you know, be pushing this, but I knew that these would be of interest to the listeners, because I know I'm not the only one who's heard these shows and thought, you know, these seem so different than what Mike did, and why did Mike stay with them if he didn't like them, and all these sort of different things that go through your mind when you listen to the shows. But the other thing he said in this 9 hours of shows, what Deanna says about his library, I remember hearing a show of his years before, and there's a quote that he always comes out with that I'm always quite happy with, because he says that, he said it so many times, he said, a successful non-fiction book would sell around 10,000 copies, he said. Most of those books end up in libraries. And I remember one time he said, he was referring to his book, The High Priests of War. He said, The High Priests of War has sold 30,000 copies, and no libraries are going to stock that. And so he said, you know, that was obviously a successful book, but it was good to get those figures, because, you know, my book has sold, you know, way in excess of 10,000. So when I heard that years before and it had actually gone past that, I was like, wow, that's good. It's been successful. And Mike's the sort of person that would find information like that out. I wouldn't even know, you know, where I'd be looking for that. Well, I wouldn't actually think to look up, you know, what the figures are for a successful non-fiction book, what you could expect to sell, etc. But I would have thought it would be a lot more than that. And so Mike's figures were very interesting, and I completely trust them. But also through the shows, just this series of shows, the amount of books that he talks about, and oh, in this book by whoever, and that book by whoever, and I haven't heard of any of these books. And as Deanna said, he had such a vast library, but he also had an incredible memory to be able to think of all these things.
Oh, his memory was, he could cite figures and recall names of books and what the author had said. His phenomenal memory. And just at the drop of a hat, he could just remember these things. The book that he talked about, Gentile Folly, I happen to have that book. And many of the books that he mentioned are, you don't hear about them anymore, but they're available, they're there. And the reason he stayed, I think, is because it was the venue in which he could excel, in which he could use to tell the truth. And there's not that many out there. There's not that many alternative media. The alternative media is, who have you got? List them.
Well, it is difficult. When you actually think, Deanna, about the amount of shows that you listen to each week and the amount of shows that are actually out there, I know you or I don't probably get as much time as we would like. I mean, I don't really listen to music these days. When I'm doing what I do, you know, after I record shows and I've got all my show posting and my emails to deal with and that, I've constantly got headphones on playing shows that I've downloaded. And, you know, there isn't that many that I go to these days to download. I'm like, and the other thing is, I think you can find indicators. Now, the recent arrest of Monica Schaefer, for example, in Germany, I actually said, and the regular listeners will remember this, look out for the people that don't mention Monica Schaefer's arrest in Germany, because that will be an indicator that they're a gatekeeper. What do you think of that?
Well, it depends on... I did a program right after her arrest, and the program was on the meat industry. And somebody emailed me and said, are you going to mention Monica Schaefer? And I said, well, we're talking about the meat industry in the United States, so probably I won't mention it. Now, that doesn't make me a gatekeeper, and I've certainly done a lot of programs on Germany and on the Holocaust. I've written a trilogy about the actual warfare, beginning with the Civil War through World War II, and have covered it pretty extensively. So would I do a program just on her? I don't know, probably on just the whole atmosphere in Germany is so toxic when you consider what is going on. And I've done programs on Ernst Sandl. In fact, I had a whole week of Germany Off Your Knees, and it was devoted to Ernst Sandl. So I think that you have to look at a person's entire body of work and not just on the fact that they didn't cover a specific arrest when it happened, but to look at a person's whole body of work.
No, you're absolutely right. I kind of jumped in a bit there. What I was really trying to get at, of course, you've done yourself, you understand this whole business of the Holocaust, but I'm just sort of saying where people have got these news shows like certain networks we won't get into, and if they just don't want to tell the listeners about this lady being arrested, then it is something I think that could be an indicator for people. But as Diana said...
Oh, absolutely.
You know, because it's a bit like, I'll give you another example. It might be a better example. There were certain people that chose not to mention the USS Liberty last year when it was the 50th anniversary, Deanna. What do you think of that?
Well, that is a secret that has been covered from day one. Anybody that knows anything about the USS Liberty, and there's not many, because certainly the media doesn't cover it, the mainstream media doesn't cover it, but that should be something that every broadcaster in the alternative media should be covering, the situation with the USS Liberty, why it when it happened, who was in the White House when it happened, and the people that were associated with Johnson and what he said, and the people who died, and the whole deck was just nothing but in flames. It's only God saved that ship, because it was in horrid shape. If you look at the photos and the big holes in it, Israel did that, and people should have covered it. They should, and not just the 50th anniversary, but every year. That should be covered every year. It should be covered on a frequent basis.
We have a Holocaust Memorial Day every year, don't we, Deanna? So we have a USS Liberty Memorial Day.
It'll never happen, because the U.S. government has concealed the facts about that incident, that attack, that assault. They covered it up. And that, every time I think about it, it just irritates. It just, I have interviewed Phil Turney. His first book that came out about what it's called, What I Saw That Day. And bless his heart, he just keeps talking about it, and it's wonderful that he's talking about it, that he's here to talk about it. And it needs to be covered, absolutely.
Well, I agree, Dan.
And the alternative media should be covering it.
Yes, definitely. And what I've decided to do, because we've got a little bit of time left, let me just have a look at the clock. We've got about 12 minutes. Now, I mentioned earlier that there was a May 26, 2015 show, which was only 4 minutes long, in which Mike played the song Double Whoopee before he said he planned to bring us his regular show later in the day. And sadly, he passed before he was able to bring us any more shows. So we presume that from that point until around the 30th, which is the predicted time of his passing, he was obviously so ill he couldn't broadcast. But as it's only 4 minutes long, I'm going to play this for you folks, so you'll be able to hear Mike, and you'll be able to hear the song that he played for people, which was the last broadcast that he did. So I'm going to mute both myself and Deanna, and I'm going to play this for you.
Welcome aboard, ladies and gentlemen. This is Michael Collins Piper coming to you from Northern Idaho. Folks, today, before I begin my regular broadcast, I thought I'd bring you some musical entertainment, and this is a special kind of musical entertainment. This is an old World War II era recording in the English language by Charlie and His Orchestra, their rendition of the famous Jewish-American comic and singer Eddie Cantor's song, Making Whoopee. Now, I hope you will be able to understand some of the lyrics. They are singing with a German accent in the English language, and of course it's not the best recording, but I think you'll find those lyrics rather interesting. It is an adaptation, that is, of the song. So that having been said, let's make some whoopee.
Eddie Cantor to write a new verse of his famous old-timer, Making Whoopee. In one of his latest programs on the air, he sang the following song. Another war, another prophet, another Jewish Christmas trick, another season, another reason for making whoopee. A lot of dough, a lot of gold, the British Empire being sold. We're in the money, thanks to Frankie, we're making whoopee. Washington is our ghetto, Roosevelt our king. Democracy is our motto, think what a war can bring. We throw our German names away. We are the kites of USA. You are the goys, folks. We are the boys, folks. We're making whoopee.
There you go, folks. So what Mike left us with was his sense of humour, and that was the last broadcast. I think that was very fitting. Deanna, what can you tell us about Mike's actual sense of humour, you know, what he was like in that respect? Because he was obviously so intelligent in the sense of all the things he could recall, all the work that he'd done, all the reading that he'd done, the books he'd written himself, his own show. But how was he to talk to on a personal level as in that regard?
I'm just thinking, what a magnificent, remarkable exit.
Yes, absolutely. That's why I don't know. I just had the thought. I said to you before that I wasn't going to play anything, and now I just thought, let's just play this final broadcast. And I know it's upsetting for you. I'm sorry about that, but I think that. Well, that was what Mike went out on, so I think it's good to include it. And it showed, again, what he could dig up. He dug up some strange song, you know.
It's so amazing. It's just absolutely amazing. he was a brilliant, brilliant. He is a brilliant, brilliant individual. I just refuse to acknowledge that he isn't. He's just in another environment.
Yes, I agree. And I'm going to go through the books that he wrote as well for the listeners. And let's just I want to go through basically his bibliography.
Oh my goodness.
It's not all here. I should have prepared this, folks. I am sorry. But you could easily I'm in the Wikipedia page and I'm not going to read all through it because that'll be an attack on him. But it's the first thing that's come up. It's got some of the books here. Best Witness, The Mel Mermelstein Affair from 1993. Final Judgment, which of course he was most famous for. The Missing Link in the JFK Assassination Conspiracy. It's mentioned here as 1993, but it was updated several times. I think I had about the 6th or 7th edition. Then you've got The High Priest of War, which I referred to, which was 2004. And that year he also brought out The New Jerusalem, Zionist Power in America. Then in 2005, Target Trafficant, The Untold Story. And of course, Jim Trafficant died only, was it last year or the year before in some strange accident on his farm,
where he
was run over by his own tractor. Then we've got The Judas Goats, The Enemy Within from 2006. The Golem, A World Held Hostage from 2007. And when I played that clip of him talking about my book earlier on, he was on Tex's show to discuss The New Babylon, Those Who Reigned Supreme, which he bought out in 2009. But there are other books, so that'll be your homework, folks, to look these up and look at picking up some of these books. And you may be lucky, you may be able to go onto Amazon and find some that you can get secondhand cheaply. I haven't looked recently. One book that isn't on that list, and one that Deanna and I have actually done a show on, is of course My First Days in the White House, which I think was Huey Long who wrote that book originally, and then Mike decided to write a book on that subject as to what he would do in his first days in the White House, and that became a show that I did with a few people, including Deanna, and she did a fantastic show because you spent, you did a lot of prep for that, didn't you? Because you had a whole document that you'd written up as to what you would do. You actually wrote a whole manifesto, and I know the audience really appreciated it. Deanna, we've got about 3 minutes left, so I'd like to hand over to you for anything that you'd like to say, and we can close the show early if you wish.
Mike was just a remarkable individual. He always, this music. Nobody would expect that from an ordinary person, but Mike always had these something new to add, something different. So, and it was funny. Really, it was funny. I was sitting here, tears streaming down my face, and giggling about it because only he would do this. He would have the courage to do this, and the humor, and where did he find this? In Northern Idaho, of all places. He was brilliant, no matter where he was. He said his writing career was over just because he left Washington? No, he was brilliant anywhere he went. He was Mike. He was a one of a kind. That was Michael Collins Piper, one of a kind.
Thank you so much, Deanna. And I'm going to wrap up the show now, folks. I think Deanna did fantastically well today. She was very close with Mike, as you can tell. And I thank her for her wonderful information. And Mike, this is dedicated to you, my friend.
You have been listening to the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show on the Eurofolk Radio Network. Andrew's book, The Synagogue of Satan, is now available on his website, andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com, in an updated, expanded, and uncensored edition.